ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This chapter describes the history of Gaudi in the dynasty of Aila. From the womb of Urvashi came six sons named Ayu, Shrutayu, Satyayu, Raya, Jaya and Vijaya. The son of Shrutayu was Vasuman, the son of Satyayu was Shrutanjay, the son of Raya was Eka, the son of Jaya was Amita, the son of Vijaya was Bhima. Bhima's son was named Kanchan, the son of Kanchan was Hotraka, the son of Hotraka was Jagnu, who was celebrated for having drunk all the water of the Ganges in one sip. The descendants of Jagnu, one after another, were Puru, Balaka, Ajaka and Kusha. The sons of Kusha were Kushambu, Tanaya, Vasu and Kushanaba. From Kushambu came Gaudi, who had a daughter named Satyavati. Satyavati married Richika Muni after the Muni contributed a substantial dowry. And from the womb of Satyavati by Richika Muni, Jamadagni was born. The son of Jamadagni was Ram or Parashuram. When a king named Kartivirya Arjun stole Jamadagni's desire cow, Parashuram, who is ascertained by learned experts to be a Shaktyavesh incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Kartivirya Arjun. Later, he annihilated the Kshatriya dynasty 21 times. After Parashuram killed Kartivirya Arjun, Jamadagni told him that killing a king is sinful and that as a Brahmana he should have tolerated the offense. Therefore, Jamadagni advised Parashuram to atone for his sin by travelling to various holy places. We'll read the text number 1. Shri Badarayanir Uvacha Ailasya Charvashi Garbhat Shad Asan Atma Janrpa Ayushrutayush Satyayu Rayota Vijayo Jayaha. Ailas Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Ailasya of Pururava Cha, also Urvashi Garbhat, from the womb of Urvashi, Shat, six, Asan, Darvar, Atmaja, sons, Nripa, O King Parikshit, Ayu, Ayu, Shrutayu, Shrutayu, Satyayu, Satyayu, Raya, Raya, Atha, as well as Vijaya, Vijaya, Jaya, Jaya. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O King Parikshit, from the womb of Urvashi, six sons were generated by Pururava. Their names were Ayu, Shrutayu, Satyayu, Raya, Vijaya and Jaya. Since there is no purport, we'll go ahead. Text 2 and 3. Shrutayor Vasuman Putra Satyayoscha Shrutanjaya Rayasya Sutayekascha Jayasya Tanayo Mitaha. Bhima's son of Satyayu was Shrutanjay, the son of Raya Yeka, the son of Jaya Amita, the son of Vijaya Bhima. The son of Bhima was Kanchana, the son of Kanchana was Hotraka, the son of Hotraka was Jagnu, who drank all the water of the Ganges in one sip. Text number 4. The son of Jagnu was Puru, the son of Puru was Balaka, the son of Balaka was Ajaka, and the son of Ajaka was Kusha. Kusha had four sons named Kushambu, Tanaya, Vasu and Kushanaba. The son of Kushambu was Gadi. Text number 5 and 6. Tasya Satyavatim Kanyam Richiko Yachata Dvija. Translation. King Gadi had a daughter named Satyavati, whom a Brahmana sage named Richika requested from the king to be his wife. King Gadi, however, regarded Richika as an unfit husband for his daughter, and therefore he told the Brahmana, "My dear sir, I belong to the dynasty of Kusha. Because we are aristocratic Kshatriyas, you have to give some dowry for my daughter. Therefore, bring at least 1,000 horses, each as brilliant as moonshine, and each having one black ear, whether right or left." Purport. The son of King Gadi was Vishwamitra, who was said to be a Brahmana and Kshatriya combined. Vishwamitra attained the status of a Brahmarishi, as explained later. From the marriage of Satyavati with Richika Muni, would come a son with the spirit of a Kshatriya. King Gadi demanded that an uncommon request be fulfilled before the Brahmana Richika could marry his daughter. Omagyana timirandasya gyananjana shlakaya chakshuron militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha namo. So in this particular chapter, Shukdev Goswami is describing the dynasty from Pururava. So he is describing the sons of Pururava and the grandsons, the dynasty of Pururava. So in today's verse, it talks about the king called Gadi, who comes in the dynasty of Pururava. So it is described that this king Gadi had a daughter named Satyavati, and a Brahmana sage called Richika requested the king so that he can marry his daughter. So then when the Brahmana requested the king, so the king thought that this Brahmana is actually unfit to be husband for my daughter. So he put a condition that you should actually bring 1,000 horses. So one thing we can learn from this is here we see that this king, in order to marry his daughter, that the Brahmana is not suitable, because he felt that this Brahmana does not have much wealth, so he cannot actually take care of my daughter. So we can see that definitely, like, wealth is one of the consideration in taking care of when a person gets married to a person. He has to have wealth so that he can actually protect the family. But that is one consideration. But there is another consideration is that not simply giving physical protection to the family, but one should also be able to guide the dependents in the path of self-realization. So although this Brahmana, he was, because it is mentioned as a Brahmana, so he must be having the scriptural knowledge, he must be advanced in the path of self-realization, but then the king did not consider that qualification. He mainly considered that, oh, he is not having wealth to protect my daughter, so he should bring so much of wealth. So when a person is in the bodily conception of life, he mainly sees the physical comfort. But then when a person becomes advanced, he sees that not only he should be able to give physical comfort, but one should be able to actually help me in the path of self-realization. So in contrast to this, we see the example in the case of Swayambhu Manu. Swayambhu Manu, he was the emperor of the whole universe. When he wanted to give his daughter in marriage to somebody, he chose Kardama Muni, who was living in a small hut. He didn't have any wealth. But although Kardama Muni had no wealth, but Swayambhu Manu chose him to be the husband of his daughter because Kardama Muni was advanced in the path of self-realization. So he had full confidence that he would be able to actually guide his daughter in the path of self-realization. He would be able to deliver his daughter. So we can see that Swayambhu Manu, although he was such a great emperor, but his consideration was in choosing a husband for his daughter was whether a person is spiritually advanced, not simply materially wealthy. So this is one thing we can learn from this particular verse. But since today being Shivaratri, so I thought for my own purification and for the glorification of Lord Shiva, I thought I'll try to speak something about Lord Shiva. So we may not speak much about Lord Shiva, but mainly I wanted to speak about this demigod worship, because like many of us before coming to Krishna consciousness, we have been worshipping different demigods. So what is the, we have to understand the demigod worship in proper perspective, because sometimes a person, after coming to Krishna consciousness, a person develops, starts criticizing those who are worshipping demigods, or a person becomes averse to the demigods. So one has to understand what is actually this, who are demigods and what is the demigod worship. Because it is said that Lord Shiva is the leader of all the demigods. So it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the position of the demigods in the 11th canto. It is said, Bhajanti ye yata devan, deva api tataivatan, chayeva karma sachiva, sadavo dina vatsala. It is said that those who bhajanti ye yata devan, so those who worship the demigods, when people worship the demigods, such people, they receive reciprocation from the demigods exactly according to their offering which they are given to the demigods. So when a person worships the demigods, he receives reciprocation from the demigods exactly according to what he has done, according to his karma. And then it is said, Chayeva karma sachiva. The demigods, they are tiny servants of a person's karma. In the sense that, just like a shadow of an object follows precisely the movements of an object. Shadow of an object, it will follow precisely the movements of the object. It will not like appear long or small. It will not make the object distorted. It will precisely follow the movements of the object. So similarly, the demigods reciprocate. They actually reciprocate with people who worship them exactly according to their karma. They award happiness and distress to a person exactly according to the person's karma. On the other hand, the sadhus, or the pure devotees, they are actually merciful to the fallen. Sadhavo dina vatsala. So here, in this particular verse, the position of the demigods are precisely told. How when a person worships the demigods, a person will get exactly according to his worship. Whereas the devotees are actually merciful to the fallen. So it is said that devotees can interfere with the karma of a living entity, and then devotees can make a person give up his fruitive activities and actually benefit the person. Whereas the demigods, they will not interfere with the karma of a living entity. They will actually reciprocate with the person based on his karma. So, but then one may ask, especially in this world, there are many people who are in the garb of devotees who advertise themselves to be selfless workers. There are many like karmis or the fruity workers, they advertise themselves to be selfless. They may be doing so much of philanthropic work, they may be into altruistic activities. And then they may advertise themselves to be the best friend of the humanity, and they may call themselves as a selfless worker. And then there are also many philosophers or jnanis who want to merge into the Supreme Lord, who want to merge into the impersonal Brahman, and who may claim themselves to be desireless, and they may also advertise themselves to be selfless. But then actually, both the karmis and jnanis, they are actually servants of lusty desires. The reason is, the karmis, although these philanthropists and altruists, although they advertise themselves to be the best friend of humanity, but they are unable to give actual benefit to the people because they are ignorant of eternal life, which is filled with bliss and knowledge. Because they are having ignorance, they cannot actually benefit the people. And the jnanis, although they proudly declare themselves to be God, and they want to merge themselves into the body of God, but they neglect to explain how somebody who can claim themselves to be God has come in under the influence of Maya. If somebody says that actually all of us can become God, if somebody is God, then how is it possible that a God can come under the influence of Maya? So they cannot explain that. So both karmis and jnanis, although they advertise, they may claim themselves to be selfless, but they are not actually selfless because they are having material desires. So only the devotees who are actually rendering pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, they are actually selfless. And they are actually merciful to the fallen. But then the purport to this particular verse, Srila Madhvacharya, he quotes an interesting verse from a scripture called Uddama Samhita. So Madhvacharya says, Sukham ichyanti bhutanam prayo dukkha saha nrinam tatapi tebhya pravara deva yeva hare priya. So Madhvacharya is saying, rishis, they are always desiring the happiness of all living entities. In fact, great sages and rishis, they cannot tolerate the sufferings of others. But although these rishis, sages, they are desiring the happiness of everyone, although they cannot tolerate the sufferings of others, but the demigods are better than the sages. Because they are dear to the Supreme Lord. So this particular verse is quoted in the commentary to this particular verse, which I spoke, that how the demigods, they simply reciprocate with a person exactly according to the person's karma, just like a shadow. Whereas the devotees are actually merciful to the fallen. So the verse actually speaks that the devotees are superior to the demigods, because devotees, irrespective of whether a person has good karma or bad karma, they are merciful to the person. And the verse speaks that the demigods are inferior to the devotees because they reciprocate exactly according to the person's karma. But in the purport to this particular verse, Madhvacharya is speaking this particular verse from the Uddama Samhita, which says that the demigods are superior to the sages who are concerned with the welfare of all living entities. Because the demigods are dear to the Supreme Lord. And in the same purport to the particular verse of the Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami, again, he basically reinstates the principle which is explained in the verse. Jiva Goswami says, Jiva Goswami says that the sadhus or the devotees are actually merciful to the people because They do not see whether a person has good karma or bad karma. So how do we understand understand this contradiction, which is explained by contradiction between the two acharyas, Madhvacharya and Jiva Goswami? One says the demigods are superior to the sages, and the another says that devotees are actually superior because they do not see the person's good karma or bad karma. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he actually resolves a contradiction by saying the verse which is quoted by Madhvacharya, in which he talks about the rishis, and he said that sages are concerned with the welfare of the people. There he said that the word rishi actually indicates the so-called sadhus who are among the karmis and jnanis, who advertise themselves to be the selfless workers. It does not actually refer to the pure devotees. It refers to those so-called philanthropists and altruists, who are actually ignorant of the eternal life of bliss and knowledge, who do not know how to actually do welfare to the people. So in this way, he actually reconciles the contradiction. So basically, the conclusion of this particular verse is, we can see that worshipping demigods is superior to following the so-called philanthropists and altruists, the so-called sadhus. Because especially in Kali Yuga, nowadays we see that there are so many people, so many sadhus, people follow so many sadhus who are actually propagating different altruistic activities or philanthropic activities. They don't advocate even demigod worship. So worshipping a demigod is at least is superior to following the so-called sadhus, who are in the garb of philanthropists and altruists. But higher than worship of the demigods is actually following a pure devotee of the Lord. So this is actually the position of demigod worship. And another thing we can understand is that, so we can see that demigod worship is given some status, because it is said that demigod worship is, worshipping demigods is superior to following the so-called selfless workers, so-called sadhus. So that is why in the Bhagavad Gita also, although Krishna says that those who worship the demigods with lusty desires are less intelligent, but still Krishna gives some value to the people who worship the demigods. Krishna says, Satya Shraddaya Yuktas Tasya Radhana Mihate Labateche Tatak Kaman Mayaiva Vihitan Hitan. Krishna says that if a person decides to worship a particular demigod, I make the faith of the person steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. So the very fact that Krishna makes the faith of a person who desires to worship a demigod steady, that means he is giving some value to the people who wants to worship a demigod. The reason is, when a person actually worships a demigod, when a person properly worships a demigod, it will actually lead to devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So the classic story which actually illustrates this principle is that there was a Brahmana who was a devout worshipper of Lord Shiva. So he wanted to lead a religious life, but then Lord Shiva came in his dream and said that, you please go to this sadhu called Sanatan Goswami, because this Brahmana was living in Vrindavan. And he has a touchstone, and when when he gives a touchstone, all your problems will be solved. So this Brahmana went to, hearing the words of Lord Shiva, because he was a sincere worshipper of Lord Shiva, so he went, took the words of Lord Shiva seriously, and then he went to this Brahman. He went to this Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan Goswami, then he asked for the touchstone from Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan Goswami said, okay, you can take the touchstone. The touchstone is lying in the garbage can. So then he went and took the touchstone from the garbage can. But then he got a doubt. You remember, touchstone is a stone that which can actually fulfill all one's desires. So he thought, if this sadhu is keeping this touchstone, which can fulfill any desire in a garbage can, that means he must be having something more valuable than the touchstone. So then, with that doubt, he asked the sadhu, like, why did you put the touchstone in the garbage can? Do you have something more valuable? Then Sanatana Goswami said, then he talked about the temporary nature of the material objects, the temporary nature of the material happiness. And then he talked about the superior nature of the spiritual happiness. Then he said, if you want to get something which is more valuable than the touchstone, I'm ready to give you, but on one condition. You have to throw the touchstone in the Yamuna, and then you have to come to me. So then after hearing from Sanatana Goswami, after hearing, taking his association, then he was ready to take that leap of faith. Then he put the touchstone in the Yamuna. Then he came and surrendered to Sanatana Goswami. Then Sanatana Goswami gave the holy name of the Lord. So here we see a person who is sincerely worshipping a demigod, how he has progressed. He progressed from being a Lord Shiva's worshipper to a mixed devotee of Lord Krishna. When we say mixed devotee, that means he is having mixed faith. Mixed faith means he approached the devotee of the Supreme Lord with a desire to get material wealth. That means his faith in Sanatana Goswami is contaminated, because he wanted material wealth. That is why he approached Sanatana Goswami. That is why it is called mixed faith. Whereas when a person takes shelter of a devotee of the Lord with no desire for one's personal happiness, that is called a pure faith. So, but then at least he has come to the devotee of the Lord. So this faith in Lord Shiva, it led to mixed faith in a devotee of Krishna. And then that mixed faith in the devotee of Krishna, it finally led him to pure faith, because he actually took that leap of faith. He put that touchstone in the Yamuna. He took that faith. He has something more valuable. It needs great guts to put the touchstone and then to surrender to Lord Sanatana Goswami. So here we see that demigod worship led to mixed faith, and then eventually that mixed faith led to pure faith in a devotee or in Krishna. So that is why Krishna, although he condemns demigod worship, still he says that he is giving some value to the people who worship demigods. That is why he makes the faith of the person who wants to worship the demigod steady, because that will eventually lead to mixed faith, and then that will eventually lead to pure faith in Krishna. So, but we also find many statements in the scriptures which condemn demigod worship. Like Krishna himself said that those who worship demigods are less intelligent. And the Isha Upanishad, it is said, Andam tama pravishanti ye sambhutim upasate tato bhuya yavate tamo yau sambhutyam uparata. It is said that those who worship the demigods, they enter into the darkest region of ignorance. And still more so are those who worship the impersonal absolute. So here we see that those who worship the demigods are condemned to go into the darkest region of ignorance. And there are also many other strong statements which condemn those who worship demigods. So when a person hears such statements in this, which are mentioned in the scriptures, which speak heavily against people who worship demigods, or which speaks heavily against those who do not inquire about the goal of life, so one may develop an aversion towards the Vedic scriptures. Why such heavy words are used? So I was reading a nice analogy. I don't know who wrote this article on the newsletter. So it is said, just like, suppose one of your friend is going towards a, say, railway track, and he is having, he is hearing something in the Walkman or say MP3 player or something in the full volume, and he is oblivious to the fact that the train is coming in the railway track, and he is about to actually enter the railway track, and if he just enters, and he will be actually killed in the railway platform. So one may, when the train comes, you know, like how much sound is there, but he is not hearing that sound, he is completely oblivious to that fact. So one may shout at him, or one may say, "Hey Ramesh, please do not enter," like one may say, but then it will not work. So on the other hand, if a person picks up a stone and then with full force hits at him, so one may think like this act to be very cruel. One may find this act to be very cruel. That's what a cruel person, like he's hitting this person at a with a, such a sharp stone. But then he understands that he is actually going to be vanquished. He is going to be killed. So, understanding that, he is actually putting a stone. Realizing at least when the stone hits, he will immediately understand stone is train is coming, and then he will not step into the track. So similarly, scriptures sometimes they speak such heavy words against those who do not pursue self-realization or those who follow this path of demigod worship, because they understand that they are going in the wrong path. Why is it said that those who worship the demigods, they go into the darkest region of ignorance? Because one may ask the question, when a person worships say moon god or sun god, they will be going to the planets of moon god or sun god, which is a heavenly planet in which better sense gratification is available. There is going to be like long life and better body, all the comforts will be better. But then why the scripture say that it is going to be the darkest region of ignorance? So Prabhupada explains in Isopanishad, he says that the whole material universe, it is the darkest region of ignorance, because the whole material universe, it needs support from the sun and moon to get light. That means the material universe does not have the light. It is actually the darkest place. So whether the heavenly planet or the earthly planet or the lower planet, the whole material universe is the darkest region of ignorance. So one has to understand that such heavy words are used out of concern for the other person, not to actually criticize such persons. Understanding the destination of such a person, such heavy words are used so that person gets shaken up, and he understands. He starts inquiring whether I am going the right path or in the wrong path. So that is why we see that although scriptures condemn demigod worship, but the Supreme Lord, who is actually the source of all the scriptures, how he actually behaves with the demigod worshippers. Like, although we see so many people who worship the demigods, but then when we deal with such people, we should not quote these verses, but we have to actually behave with them in a respectful manner. As it is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dealt with the demigod worshippers. Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that by seeing everything in relation to Krishna, but by maintaining chastity and utilizing any opportunity to be accessible, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed to the devotees of Lord Shiva the royal path of devotional service to Lord Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he saw everything in relation to Krishna. If you remember in the South India Yatra lecture, Sulanath Radhanath Maharaj was saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to all the temples in South India. He went to not only the Vishnu temples, he went to the temples of Lord Shiva, Durga, all the temples, because he saw everything in relation to Lord Krishna. But at the same time, he maintained his chastity towards Lord Krishna. And in this way, he actually revealed to the devotees of the demigods, to the devotees of Lord Shiva, the royal path to bhakti. So that is the principle, that although demigod worship is condemned, when you deal with such people, one has to actually respect them. That is why even in the Nectar of Devotion, one of the principles of sadhana bhakti is not disrespecting the demigods. So there, Srila Jiva Goswami says there are two types of devatas. One is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, another is the living entity who is actually given special power by the Supreme Lord. Because if you disrespect the demigods, you might end up disrespecting the Supreme Lord. Because sometimes the Supreme Lord himself takes the role of a demigod when he sees that some living entities, there is nobody suitable to occupy the post of a demigod. And there are other times a living entity is given some power to occupy the position of a demigod. See, in both cases, one should not disrespect the demigod. The reason is because when you disrespect a particular person, that means a person is having pride in his heart. When you disrespect a particular person, pride increases and the humility decreases. And when there is a pride, there is no question of devotional service cannot take shelter of in the heart of a person who is actually proud. So that is why it is said that not only it is mentioned that one should not disrespect the demigods, but then another principle of sadhana bhakti is not giving pain to any living entity. Because when a person again gives pain to any living entity, like means a person is proud. So devotion cannot take shelter in the heart of such a person. And moreover, this principle is actually, if we broaden the principle, that because a person should not disrespect a demigod, because the demigod is given a power by the Supreme Lord. He has attained the grace of the Supreme Lord. So Krishna says in the Gita, that was 10th chapter, Yadyad vibhutimat sattvam shrimat urjitam evava tattat evava gachyatvam mama tejomsha sambhavam. So whenever you see a power, beauty or opulence in this world, you should know that to be a fragment of my opulence. So what to speak of demigod, if you see anybody who is powerful, who is having a special opulence or a beauty, one should not disrespect such a person. I say when Sanatan Goswami was having Bhagavatam discourse. He was discussing Bhagavatam among the Brahmanas, devotees at his house. That time Nawab Hussain Shah entered his house. So as soon as Nawab Hussain Shah entered, all the Brahmanas and Sanatan Goswami stood up and then they welcomed him and then they gave him a place to sit. They properly respected him. So actually Nawab Hussain Shah is a cow eater. He's a malecha. He's even lower than a shudra. But then all these pure devotees, they were giving worship to, they were respecting him because he has taken the position of a king. So any person who is actually is in the position of a king, who is having a power, it means he's having a particular grace of the Supreme Lord. Although it may be material, so because he has attained the grace of the Supreme Lord, so one has to respect him. So that is why, the crux of the demigod worship can be summarized in two sentences. Like, I heard this from one devotee. He said, you cannot respect Krishna by disrespecting his limbs. You cannot respect Krishna by disrespecting the demigods who are his limbs. And you cannot respect Krishna by simply respecting his limbs. So this means like, simply by worshipping a demigod, you cannot respect Krishna. And by disrespecting a demigod, you cannot respect Krishna. So we see that that's why in the fourth canto, in one particular verse, when Maitreya Rishi was addressing Vidura, Maitreya Rishi was saying, Bhagavan Svena Bhagena Sarvatma Sarva Bhagabuk Daksham Babasa Abhashya Priyamana Ivanaga. It is said, Maitreya Rishi is saying, Lord Vishnu, who is the enjoyer of, O sinless Vidura, Lord Vishnu, who is the enjoyer of all the sacrifices, he took his share of sacrifice from the sacrifice performed by Daksha Prajapati. And although he is the super soul of all living entities, he is the super soul of all the living entities, and then he spoke to Daksha Prajapati in a pleasing attitude. So that Srila Prabhupada says that Lord Vishnu, he is the enjoyer of all the sacrifices, but then when Daksha Prajapati performed a sacrifice, Lord Vishnu took only his quota from the sacrifice which was offered. So in a sacrifice, there is a quota for different demigods, for Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Agnidev, Indra, Chandra, etc. But Lord Vishnu is the enjoyer of all the sacrifices, but still he did not interfere with the quota which is supposed to be taken by the other demigods. He took only his quota. So in this way, Lord Vishnu is indicating to Daksha Prajapati his displeasure towards Daksha Prajapati, because Daksha Prajapati did not allow Lord Shiva to take his quota of the sacrificial offering. So Lord Vishnu indicated as Daksha Prajapati because he disrespected Lord Shiva. And Maitreya Rishi, when he was speaking this verse, he addresses Vidura by the word Anaga, was sinless Vidura, because he says, you are sinless because you never offended any of the demigods. You are a pure devotee of the Lord, you did not offend any demigods. So again we see this principle of worshipping the Supreme Lord at the same time not disrespecting any of his limbs. But then one may find in the scriptures, like even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes Lord Shiva is also addressed as Bhagavan. Like if, for example, if you see in the fourth canto, sixth chapter, after Daksha Prajapati was killed by Lord Shiva, like all the demigods, in order to pacify Lord Shiva, they went to Lord Shiva and then they glorified Lord Shiva. If you read those verses, it will appear that Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of God. And Lord Shiva is also called as Bhagavan in many places. So how do we understand? So if we see that particular instance where the Lord demigods addressing the Lord Shiva, the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in that particular instance, Lord Vishnu was not present. So when Lord Vishnu was not present, all the demigods addressed Lord Shiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when Lord Vishnu was present, everyone, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva and all the other demigods, they accept Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of God. So we can understand that when a devotee is, and also we can see that not only Lord Shiva is addressed as the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of God, that sometimes even Maitreya Rishi, Narada Muni, they are also addressed as Bhagavan. Because they are actually as good as Bhagavan, because they can bless any person just like the Supreme Personality of God can bless a particular person. In that sense, they are called as Bhagavan. So it is said that Namani Sarvani Vishnu. In the Upanishad, it is said that all the nouns in the Sanskrit language, they primarily indicate only Lord Krishna. So in that sense, even the names of Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they primarily indicate only Vishnu. But only after Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma appeared, then these names, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, these nouns, they actually secondarily indicate them. But they primarily indicate only Lord Vishnu. That's why Jiva Goswami, he says in the Sandarbha, which is quoted in the Bhagavatam purport, Jiva Goswami says that when a pure devotee is, pure devotee's observation of the spiritual master and Lord Shiva as being identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in the sense that they are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like Krishna says in the 11th canto, Acharya mam vijaniyam. You should consider the Acharya, the spiritual master, as non-different from myself. And when Lord Vishnu speaks to Daksha Prajapati, Lord Vishnu glorifies Lord Shiva as equal to himself. You should know that Lord Shiva is non-different from me. So when such statements are there, the scriptures that Lord Shiva is identical with Lord Vishnu, you should understand that they are equal to the Supreme Lord in the sense that they are the most confidential servitor of the Supreme Lord, or they are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So because of that, one should consider Lord Shiva or the spiritual master to be identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one should respect them just like one would respect the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But not equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all respects. So in that way it is explained in the. So why is it that Lord Shiva is the most confidential servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, most dear servant of the Supreme Lord? So it is explained in the 4th canto, Atma Ramopi Yastvasya Loka Kalpasya Radhase Shaktya Yukto Vicharati Goraya Bhagavan Bhava. She said, Lord Shiva, the most powerful demigod, he is second only to Lord Vishnu, and he is completely self-sufficient, self-satisfied, Atma Ram. But although he has nothing to aspire for in the material world, for the benefit of the people of this material world, he is always busily engaged in doing welfare activities for the people of this world. And he is accompanied by his dangerous energies like Goddess Durga. So it is said Lord Shiva is completely self-satisfied but is engaged in welfare activities of the people of this world. So usually when we see a person who is self-satisfied, so we may expect that the person will not engage in many activities. And when we see a person who is busily engaged in so many activities, so we have the notion that this person is actually so passionate that he cannot sit at a place, he has to do so many things. But here it is explained that Lord Shiva is actually self-satisfied, but he is busily engaged in doing welfare activities for everyone. So he is self-sufficient, self-satisfied in the sense that he is actually, he is experiencing superior happiness in performing devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And that absorption, that superior happiness in rendering devotional service, it does not make him just simply keep quiet, but it makes him to do welfare activities, or it makes him to share that devotional service with the people of this world. That is why we find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Lord Shiva Sadashiva appeared as Advaita Acharya, it is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the house of Advaita Acharya, all the devotees were engaged in Krishna Katha and Krishna Kirtan, and they were completely blissful. But then the very next verse describes that Advaita Acharya was feeling great unhappiness by seeing the suffering condition of the people of this world. So the previous verse explains that how they were completely blissful. The next verse explains that how Advaita Acharya is actually feeling so much unhappiness. So that led him to offer praise to the Supreme Lord, and then led to the descent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here we see that Lord Shiva is very dear to the Supreme Lord because he is always busily engaged in the welfare activity of the Supreme Lord. And that is coming from his superior happiness by engaging in devotional service to the Lord. So when we are engaged in welfare activities of the people of the world, we are basically trying to follow our nature. Because we ourselves are not experiencing superior happiness. So we are basically trying to do welfare activities for others for our purification by acting as a servant of the representatives of the Lord who actually have compassion. But in the case of Lord Shiva, when he is doing welfare activities, it is actually arising from his deep taste in chanting the holy names, or deep taste in performing devotional service. So finally, I will conclude with this point. How Lord Shiva, in the Bhagavad Gita, we see that Lord Shiva becomes, there is an instance how Lord Shiva becomes astonished at a devotee of the Lord. In the first chapter, this verse comes, Eva Mukto Rishi Kesho Guda Keshena Bharata. After Arjuna spoke to Lord Krishna, telling him to take the chariot in between the armies, Arjuna, who is called as Gudakesh, was conquered ignorance. So Krishna took the chariot in between the armies. So there Arjuna is addressed by the word Gudakesh. So the word Gudakesh actually means, the acharyas say, that Gudakesh is a combination of two words, Gud and Akesh. Akesh refers to Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva. And Gud means sugar. So Gudakesh means, Arjuna is called as Gudakesh, that means one who gave sweetness to Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva. One who is sugar for Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva. So Arjuna gave a superior happiness. Arjuna gave sweetness, gave an experience of sweetness to Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva by giving an experience that how Krishna is controlled by Arjuna's instruction. Please take the chariot in between the armies. So when Arjuna gave that instruction and Krishna took the chariot in between the armies, this astonished Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. So they experienced the sweetness of Lord Krishna, that how Lord Krishna comes under the control of his devotees. So that is why one of the names of Krishna is called Achyuta. The word Achyuta means Krishna, and Arjuna said, Senayor Ubayor Madhi Ratham Sthapaya Me Achyuta. And Arjuna says that, oh Achyuta, please do not think I am ordering you. Because you are Achyuta, do not forget, because you are Achyuta, that means, do not forget your innate quality of never failing in your affection towards the devotees. Krishna's innate quality is one who never fails in his affection towards the devotees. So that's why in the Brahma Samhita it is said, Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam. Advaitam means one who has no equal, one who is incomparable. So Krishna is Advaitam. So what is actually is, Krishna is called Advaitam, one who has no equal. He is incomparable in giving his body to his devotees. That is, in that sense, he is incomparable even to Lord Vishnu. So that is the topmost quality of Lord Krishna, that he is incomparable in giving his body to his devotees. And although he is Advaita, he is called Achyuta. It means although he gives himself to his devotees, he suffers no degradation in giving himself to his devotees. Normally when you give something, yourself to your devotees, that when you give yourself to another person, you lose that. But then Krishna is called Achyuta, that although he gives his own body to the devotees, but he suffers no degradation. So when Lord Shiva saw this particular quality, that how Krishna came under the control of Arjuna, he actually became astonished. So I'll stop here. So to summarize, we saw the position of a demigod. We saw that how worshipping a demigod is greater than worshipping, following a so-called selfless worker, philanthropist and altruist. And higher than that is worshipping associating with the pure devotee of the Lord. And then we talked about how demigod worship leads to mixed faith in Krishna, and that leads to pure faith. And then we talked about why demigod worship is condemned. We talked about why the scriptures use such heavy words. and how one should deal with the demigod worshippers with respect. That's why this principle of not disrespecting the demigods is there in Nectar of Devotion. And we talked about how we try to understand how Lord Shiva is called as Bhagavan. Why is he called as Bhagavan in some places? And then, because he is actually very dear to the Supreme Lord. And he is very dear to the Supreme Lord because he is actually engaged in doing welfare activities for others. And then we saw that how Lord Shiva was astonished by the Arjuna devotee because he actually controlled Lord Krishna by his love. That's why Krishna is called Advaitam Achyutam. One has no equal in giving himself to his devotees. And although he gives himself to his devotees, but he suffers no degradation. That is why he is called Achyuta. So I'll stop here. It's actually over time, I'll not take any questions. Krantana Srimad Bhagavatam ki chai, Srila Prabhupada ki chai.